This is a Crestview Bible podcast. For more information, visit CrestviewHutch.org.
So we have a few things that we're going to do this morning. I need to give you a couple of announcements from the elders, so we're going to do that. We're going to dig into wrapping up this series we've been in for most of the summer. So we're going to give some clarity to that. And then walk through all that and prepare for where we'll be starting next week in a new series. So these are all the things that we're doing. So first off, the elders have a couple of things to communicate to you today. And the first one is called A New Investment in Families at Crestview. A New Investment in Families at Crestview. So for several years, a conviction's been taking shape among us, one that the Bible is clear about, that the primary place that children are formed in faith is in the home. Fathers and mothers, grandparents and caregivers, you're not the support team for what the church does with your kids. You are the ministry. And our job is to equip you for it. So as that conviction grew, we had to ask an honest question. Does Wednesday night faithfully reflect that conviction? And so we've had a committed team of people that have served on Wednesday night for years to teach children, and we're grateful for every hour that they've invested. But the more closely we looked, the harder it got to answer yes. So we kept running into questions we couldn't resolve, not questions about whether our conviction was right, but about whether what we were doing actually fit it. And so our leaders have felt that gap more and more, and it's led us to a hard but clear choice, and it's time to transition this work. So we are moving away from a weekly Crestview Kids program and toward two things that we believe will serve your family better. First of all, a quarterly all-church family meal nights where every generation will gather together and will learn together what it means to be a family of families who make Jesus known to one another. So this is going to be led by those who are gifted and passionate about serving children with support from small groups. So the first one, by the way, is September the 9th, 6:30 p.m., and that's before any of you can use the excuse of the Kansas State Fair to get busy, that you're busy. So this is September the 9th at 6:30. That's the first quarterly family meal night. And then we're also prioritizing small groups to intentionally engage with your children. So intentionally engage in relationships, learning, and life together, rather than just sending kids off to another room. So we don't believe this is stepping back from your kids. We believe it's stepping towards them, towards your family as a whole unit, and trusting that the most important discipleship in their lives is shaped by people who tuck them in at night, not by a Wednesday night program. A lot of you, the questions we've got, we've talked about this, to my knowledge, with everyone who's affected by it directly. We've talked to all the teachers. The children's ministry team has helped us with this conviction. It's kind of their conviction, too. And so we've had a lot of communication going on. And a lot of the question we've gotten back from people is, well, what about students? Does any of this touch our 6th to 12th grade ministry that happens? And it doesn't. Student ministry is continuing on Wednesday nights. We do have some changes planned for the fall. I think we're going to probably be meeting in homes rather than at the church building. But if anything, it's the same conviction at work that discipleship will be happening around tables and in living rooms, close to family life, not a program set apart from it. So we're going to have more details as that comes into focus for the fall. So we know this raises questions for you. We know you may wonder what's going on. You may want to have conversations, and we're ready for those conversations. So you can talk to any elder. You can talk to, so that's me, Tom, Jason. You could talk to any person in the children's ministry team. That would be Caleb Gaddert, Kathy Warren, and Mandy Swisher. We can talk to you about this decision and why we've headed there. We also are dealing with this conviction in adult Sunday school for the next 5 weeks. We started that series this morning, as you probably saw in the view. So if you're wondering, well, where did this conviction come from? It's right there in Sunday school. We spent probably 10 to 12 hours working with other leaders on these convictions. And so this is kind of where it's emerged and what it's led us to. So The 10 to 12 hours is my guess on the formal time we've spent together. There's been a lot of informal conversations happening, so we don't want to keep doing something that's real comfortable at the expense of doing something better. So that's why we're making this move, and we just want to make you aware of it. It seemed like the right time to communicate that. So that's the update on a new investment in families at Crestview. No Wednesday night weekly children's Crestview Kids program, but we will have students happening weekly in the fall, but we will also be prioritizing quarterly all-church family dinner nights, with September 9th being the first one, and then prioritizing small groups and how they engage your children. So we're doing some work on all those fronts. Secondly, another update from the elders. That was number one. And we wanted to give you a financial update as of late July 2026. As you're likely aware, summer changes our rhythm. There's vacations happening. Schedules are a lot looser than they were. And a lot of us are in and out of gatherings more than we are during, like, the school year, the rest of the year. And that's normal. It's part of the season. I'm leaving for vacation Thursday. So, I mean, this is the time of year for that. But this change in rhythm does affect us. Summer's consistently the leanest stretch that we have for giving. And during this stretch, we also have some of our biggest ministry investments happening. So you think of, like, in the month of June, we had VBS. What's maybe our largest outreach to children in the community. And then in July, we just came off youth camp a couple weeks ago, where that's another huge financial investment in the lives of teenagers. And we feel like both are worth every dollar that we put into them. So just like we did with the Deacons Fund, and you all have responded so amazingly, thank you for those gifts. Thank you for putting all that. The Deacons Fund has some money in it now, and we continue to navigate that. I saw the deacons working on a request just over the weekend about someone in our body needing some assistance. We want to be honest with you about where things are financially. So we've recently had to move some money out of savings to keep pace with our commitments, which is fine. That's what savings are for, right? There's no crisis, but it is a reminder of something we don't want to lose sight of, that our giving is one way that our church family encourages one another and does its work together. So we'd be missing something if we made this only about math. So some of you are like, I thought math was a school thing. And that's, it's not just about math for us. In 2 Corinthians 8, Paul points to churches whose generosity overflowed out of joy, not because they had much, but because they had first given themselves to the Lord. And that's what we know is alive and well in this room, that there is a heart for what we're doing here. You all love it, you support it, and so that it's in that regard that we're asking for gifts, not because we are needy, not because this is just a lean stretch, but because we know this is where your heart is. It flows from what Jesus has already done in our lives, and we don't want to pressure you outside of that pressure, outside of that reality of what Jesus has done for you. That's enough. So if you're a regular part of this church family but don't regularly give, we'd love for you to consider some kind of gift. It's easy to set that up on the church website if you just want to schedule it out. That's what I do because I'm, you know, paying bills, and I just need to know that that's coming out regularly so that I'm consistent with it, and it kind of comes out. And so maybe that would serve you. You could set up a gift. We're not telling you what to give. We're just letting a need be known and inviting you to partner with us if you're regularly here. If you've been away for a stretch this summer, this is a simple invitation to catch up as you're able to. So the easiest way, I think, is still online, but you can set up a recurring gift. You could do an online thing. You can always drop a check in the mail. You could drop a check in the box in the back of the room. Here's the deal. You all know this. We don't talk about money. I hate talking about money. I had an hour-long conversation with my therapist this week just talking about all the ways that I've been almost traumatized growing up in church talking about money in anticipation of this. I don't like talking about it, but it's important because it reflects our worship. It reflects the stewardship we have. There's the S word that Luke enjoys. And so we just want to make that known to you. We know this is your heart, and we know that being aware that there's a revenue issue might call some of you to action. And for those of you that are faithfully giving, we're blessed and thankful for that. We just are kind of showing up the others. If you're visiting with us and think, man, does this church always talk about money? We don't. And please don't just let everything I just said go in one ear and out the other. We're not looking to you for anything. We're just glad you're here. This is for those who are regularly a part of this. So we hope you understand our heart. We're grateful for the partnership, and we're thankful for the faithfulness that keeps our family moving on mission. That's really what we're after. So it matters. We see it, and we're blessed by you. So thank you so much for that. So those two announcements. After the service, elders will be down here in front. You can grab us during the week. You can whatever we can do to help make any of these things clearer. Justin, who handles finances, I think is out today, but between most of us, we can answer a specific question if you have that, of just what's going on and why. And I think I kind of explained the gist of the shortfall. Just lots happening and little revenue because of rhythms. Okay? All good with that? Seems like a good time. It seems like a good time for a family communication. So that's what's up with that. So today, Hebrews 2, we're coming back to that and circling back to this idea. Got to pull up another note here. Hebrews 2. We've done our announcements, and let me talk to you about, we're wrapping up this sermon today. So typically this is what we call a session six. And that means we've had five sermons, and then we come back to make some sense of that together. We've had a couple of those this year. We've had a couple in the fall last year. And so we're trying to do some time to just, what have we looked at this summer? I know some of you have been out. You've maybe missed a week, and this is me trying to build a cohesive whole as to what all we've taught you this fall. And we're continuing to learn. We're continuing to think through what this means for us to put this into practice. If you've been with us over the past year, you're getting familiar with that rhythm. At the end of a series, we take some time and go back over what we've learned. We're not covering new ground this morning. It's the same ground, and we're walking over it again. It's like we're pacing over this ground trying to find a jewel hidden that we dropped or something. I know for some of you it can feel like a wasted Sunday, but it isn't, and here's why. People who study how we actually learn will tell you that there's a long distance between hearing a thing and being changed by it. So hearing something and being changed by it. There's a ladder to it. So at the bottom, the very bottom of the ladder, you receive something. So like on a Sunday, you receive a teaching. You were in the room. You heard it, hopefully, if you didn't fall asleep. So you heard it, and then you respond to it somehow. That's the next step up the ladder. And then somewhere along the way, you start to value that truth. And at the very top, if it even gets that far, it's no longer something you believe. It's something that you are. Okay, it begins to like be infiltrated into your bones. It's your reality. So for 9 Sundays, we've been taking you up. We've been getting you onto the ladder. And so we're not thinking that all of those ladder rungs are not grabbed on your drive home on a Sunday. But there's another simpler reason. We can't tell whether teaching works based on you just listening to a sermon. So we can't tell whether or not that's made a change in your life. We find out later in the moments that nobody's planning. When somebody says something about your past and you don't flinch like you used to, or something happens and it's just now an instinctual part of life that you are just affected by the truth and you didn't even realize that you were, but that's what's happened. And so that's, in a sense, why we're stopping and doing this. We're putting all of these faces and all this content back on the table to say out loud what we've been doing all summer and to consider Jesus one more time. We want to look at him one more time. Not to learn something new, but to let what we've already said settle into us so that we can become a different kind of people. That's what we're after when we do like what we're doing this morning. So I wanted to adjust your expectations accordingly, and I hope that helps you understand kind of the method to the madness. We're trying to get this deep into your life. I can't change what you want. That's the Spirit's job in part. But I can change the deliverable. I can change what I'm doing on a Sunday and mix it up just a little bit so that that word that we know is so powerful can settle into our hearts in different ways. And that's what we're after this morning. So let's go back and look again at Hebrews 2. Let me just read verses 10 through 18. I'll say this is God's word, and you can say thanks be to God. Hebrews 2 is a great statement about why Jesus came. You see the pickup in verse 9 that for a little while Jesus was made lower than the angels and crowned with glory and honor because of his suffering, so that by the grace of God he would taste death for everyone. So it's very much gospel reality that he has died for us. And so now in light of that, look at the reality we've been looking at beginning in verse 10. For it was fitting that he, for whom and by whom all things exist, in bringing many sons to glory, should make the founder of their salvation perfect through suffering. For he who sanctifies and those who are sanctified all have one source. And that is why he is not ashamed to call them brothers, saying, I will tell of your name to my brothers in the midst of the congregation. I will sing your praise. And again, I will put my trust in him. And again, behold, I and the children God has given me. Since therefore the children share in flesh and blood, he himself likewise partook of the same things, that through death he might destroy the one who has the power of death, that is the devil, and deliver all those who through fear of death were subject to lifelong slavery. For surely he's not just helping angels, but he helps the offspring of Abraham. Therefore he had to be made like his brothers in every respect, so that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in the service to God, to make propitiation for the sins of the people. For because he himself has suffered when tempted, he is able to help those who are being tempted. This is God's word. Thanks be to God. So today we're going back and looking over how we've teased this truth out over the last 8 weeks. And so you have a chart there in your notes. When we began this series on May the 31st, I preached this passage, Hebrews 10, and introduced you to kind of what was going on in the book of Hebrews and why this foundation is sure from the scriptures, why he isn't ashamed to call us his brothers and sisters. Then Luke, on June the 7th, talked about how Jesus is not ashamed of those with embarrassing stories, using the book of Ruth. He kind of overviewed that book for us and dropped the spotlight on some embarrassing things from the world's perspective and how Jesus is not ashamed of those things. Then Tom brought us the enemies, that Jesus is not ashamed of his enemies or those who would oppose him. That was using Saul, who became Paul, but it's that Saul in the Bible, not the Old Testament Saul, although you could make an interesting case there. It's just more complicated as to whether Saul was a believer, but here we are on a rabbit trail. Acts 9, and Tom gave us truth related to that about how Jesus loves his enemies, going after Paul. On June the 21st, I was back preaching Mark 10 and talking about how Jesus is not ashamed of the overlooked. So we talked about Bartimaeus on the side of the road and how Jesus valued him and brought him up and gave him, like he dropped everything he was doing and stopped and brought the focus to Bartimaeus and how that shows kindness. Then Luke came and talked about how Jesus is not ashamed of the unclean at the end of June with the leper and how that informed. His and my sermons kind of really were getting at some of the same things, but different aspects of how Jesus goes after and is not ashamed of the unclean and the overlooked. Then John Wilson on July 4th weekend dealt with Ephesians 2 and Luke 23 with the thief on the cross to show how Jesus is not ashamed of us when we have nothing. Like when we have nothing but sin to bring to the table, how Jesus has come after us and he's not ashamed of us. Then just a couple weeks ago, how Jesus is not ashamed of those who have weakness, looking at Mary and God's promise to her and how can this be, and God saying, I'm going to give grace, I'm going to show my power through weakness in Mary's life. And then last week, Jason preaching Hebrews 2 again, dealing with those who still sin. There's a lot that Jason said to unpack this, but the characters he dropped anchor on were the example of Abraham, the example of David, applied that to our lives, fleshing that out for us to see. So we're coming back and we're rooting these, we've rooted these concepts with biblical characters for the most part. We've helped see how these things are true in our lives. So I want you to take a moment and fill in these two blanks at the bottom of your sheet on page one on the front side. As you think about Jesus not being ashamed of us, which type of person we looked at have you assumed Jesus only tolerates? And what changes when you hear him call them family when he's unashamed of them? So look at those characters, and which one did you think, that Jesus just tolerates that? But we're trying to lean into Jesus' heart and see how he's not ashamed to call all these types of people brothers and sisters. So just journal a thought there, and then if you finish that quickly, jot a quick prayer, maybe a sentence or two prayer of just how you're thankful to God for that. I'm going to quit talking so you have a second to do that. Okay. If your brain keeps going on that, just go ahead and keep filling in there some thoughts you had. If you want to flip to the backside, I've listed in the notes there three kinds of shame that we encountered in these weeks together. So I was trying to think through, what do all these characters have in common? Is there commonality with them? And I saw three kinds of shame that kind of Jesus overcomes. And the hardest is at the bottom, so he's not ashamed of us. And the first kind of shame is shame that is imposed on us through circumstances. So that was in the Ruth story and in Saul becoming Paul, or the conversion story of the Apostle Paul. The shame is from past choices, or like a family of origin, or kind of that you're on the outs of society, or you're rejected, or there's an active opposition. And it's usually someone has done this to me and I'm ashamed of that. And Jesus has overcome that kind of shame. He's not ashamed of people who have that kind of shame. The second category is shame that's like actively felt. So it's not just outside influence, but now it's felt internally. We feel these things about ourselves. In the Bartimaeus story, the leper story, those who have nothing, and like in Mary. So the shame we feel is like we're overlooked. We're just unclean. We're not worthy of his love. We're empty-handed. There's nothing we can contribute. We're just characterized by weakness. And this is something that we feel about ourselves. So Jesus is not ashamed of us if that's what we're bringing. And then the third, what I think is kind of the hardest level, is this earned shame. And that's almost what Jason was getting at last week, illustrated through Abraham and David. And for those of us who still sin, which I think is probably everybody in the room, if you want to put your finger on your neck and see if you have a pulse, I think we're all there. We all still sin. So the shame is like there's actual grounds. Like I've done this to myself. I'm the one that's messed up. Like I arranged the avenue, the venue, the seating, you know, the whole thing. Like we've arranged all this, and so therefore we almost feel like the shame's deserved. And so when Jesus comes and says, I'm not ashamed of you, we don't believe that because we've earned that. So the question kind of spinning off of that is, what gospel convictions did this sermon series reinforce or build in your heart? So another way I could ask the question, do you have a conviction around Jesus not being ashamed of you? Like, what's your conviction based on God's word? Not like, what's the correct answer, but what's your conviction? So maybe you need to name that conviction. That I still feel that he's ashamed of me when I do this, but this has reminded me, he is not ashamed of me. And then if you could conceptualize some sort of verse. So if you're looking for a memory verse, I think Hebrews 2:11 would be my offering as a, that's on the front side of your sheet, as a great verse for you to memorize, that he is not ashamed of me. But you could do John 3:16. You could do something real common that gets at what Jesus has done for you. So jot a couple thoughts there. And then as we move towards the end, I just want you to be thinking, what? Jesus is not ashamed of you. What does that mean? What does it mean for your life? What does it mean for how you treat others and how you engage on mission? So like in my life, what I quickly thought of, how does this affect how I live? It frees me. I am free. Like I don't have to burn my wheels to earn something that Jesus already loves me, that I'm free. It helps me persevere because I have security. It affects how I treat others. I don't have to shame them. If Jesus is not ashamed of them, why would I want to shame them? And I'm freed to be authentic. The relationship that values most to me, he's not ashamed of me, so I can be authentic with people. I don't have to posture. And then how I engage in mission, it helps me to get away from fearing people because Jesus is not ashamed of me. It helps me get away from feeling guilty because he's not ashamed of me. So those are some thoughts that you can fill in. I've had Luke come out so he's kind of a adjacent worker in this, what we've tried to do this summer. So what kind of is going through your head as you've processed this and what we were trying to do for the congregation and what this means? And yeah.
Well, I'll just say how it's impacted me personally in my life. The one that really stands out is this Abraham and David and the still sin aspect. And especially I was thinking through not just still sin, but still fail. Failure is maybe a bigger sticking point to me than still sin, because sin is like just like one act. All right, so he's forgiven that one act. But what if like just my failure as a parent, as an international worker, as a husband, I'm failing in like, I feel like there's a lot of areas of my life that I'm just failing. And it's like, okay, is he ashamed at my failures? Is he like, man, I'm just, Luke, you're not living up. I've given you these instructions. I've given you these standards. I've given you these things. Why can't you just do what I've said and live up to that? And it's like, wait, that's actually not what he's thinking of me. This this series has helped me see, like, man, it's not about that. Because then what happens is when I begin to, like, focus on my failures, like, oh, this is all this stuff that's happened, like, that I'm doing wrong and I'm not living up to, then I get distant from him, right? And that's really what the unclean one from the leper guy, it's not necessarily about the uncleanness. It's like the guy felt distant. Like, he was actually distant from not just community, but he would have been in the society distant from God. And so when I have, like, focus on my failures, then it's like, well, now I feel distant from God. Like, he shouldn't be near me because of my failure. Like, he's embarrassed by me. He's like, I gotta distance myself from Luke. But rather, that's not his heart. His heart is like, man, I want to draw near to you in this. I'm not ashamed of your failures. I'm not ashamed of that. Like, with David and with Abraham, I want to continue to give you responsibility. I'm going to continue to say, I'm going to put my chips into this guy. And so that's been then motivating for me to say, all right, I'm going to step back in to this work, not to try to distance myself away from the work of those things that I mentioned, but now actually I can step back into that with full confidence that, okay, I might screw up again. I probably will screw up again in these things, but that's not going to affect his love and care and compassion for me, and I can step in with more boldness into my work.
Yeah, how would we answer someone, because it's probably rolling around in someone's mind like, well, but the Bible is calling us to live a certain way. Like, what are you guys saying, that none of that matters? What would be your sense? I have a sense,
yeah,
as well.
So, yeah. Absolutely not. That's not to say, that's why I say I want to step back into this. Now, say, yeah, man, I want to follow after this.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean, it doesn't affect my relationship with him, whether I live up to those or don't. Like, I still aspire to that. Like, that's,
yeah,
what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, because of my drive to aspire to that, that's going to affect my relationship with him.
Yeah.
Rather, it shouldn't, right? It's not like, okay, in a transactional parent-child relationship, a parent might withhold their love unless the child does this, I'm going to withhold my love. That's not God at all. That's not him. He wants to say, you know, even if you continue to fail, like, I'm going to continue to pick you back up like an infant who's trying to learn how to walk. Like, gosh darn it, you fell again. What's wrong with you? Like, hopefully a parent wouldn't do that. But he's going to say, man, I'm going to pick you back up. Let's try this again, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The parent doesn't say, well, let's just stop walking now. Let's just keep crawling. No, he's going to continue to press on towards that. And the child, ideally, would want to press on to that even if he continues to fall.
Yeah.
So
Romans 6 comes to my mind, like, you know, he's not showing us love and grace and securing us in a relationship so that we can go on sinning and just live willy-nilly. He's calling us to this so that we can live differently. He's freeing us to actually lean into relationship where all the power for this will come from. So, I know we're real close to time. I would love to open it up if anyone has, like, a word to share or something that's landed for them over the last 8 weeks. He's going to grab another mic. And Jace, if you want to come help us, and if there's something you want to shout out to. But Jason always asks the question this way, like, I wonder what's rolling around in some of your heads. So if you have something rolling around in your head, I'd love to hear that. If you have even a half-baked idea. So this is a space that's safe for that. Just, hey, I'm not sure exactly the full ends of this, but here's a thought I'm having as I'm thinking about the content of this. So we'd love to encourage one another with whatever you have. So does somebody have something that maybe this sheet helped inspire, or something that's on their mind, even as we've discussed it? It doesn't have to be written down. Yeah, Tom, go ahead. You were calling for a mic, right? You weren't just saying, finish it up.
Yeah. No, I think a lot of what Luke said, all these different characters made me look at how am I viewing people? Am I viewing them like Jesus views them? And then the other side of that is, how am I viewing myself? Because I think how God looks at his enemies, how God looked at Abraham and David, and what Luke just said about, man, it seems like every day I fail somewhere, and yet he's not ashamed of me. He loves me. That's really been a good encouragement for me, that every day I can just see how he loves me so much, and there's nothing I can do to separate me from the love of Christ. So that's just really good.
what else? We have two mics, so the buses will wait. That's a Billy Graham joke, sorry. What else? Something rolling around in your head with all this. Oh, Sarah, go ahead.
I was sitting here thinking how perfect God's love is and how I aspire to love in that way. And obviously I fail, but then his love is perfect for me. So I don't know just how that all relates, but I want to love others the way God does, but just being in awe of how perfect his love is.
Yeah, terrific. I wish we were all like at one big table together somehow and we were just enjoying. We've had this family meal for the last 8 weeks. You know, what's something else that stood out to you or something else that you're wrestling or thinking through? Harold here, yeah.
Sometimes it takes me a while to get my thoughts together.
That's good.
When Luke was talking here toward last, it occurred to me that maybe we ought to sin more so that God's grace shows up more. And Paul definitely speaks against that.
Yeah.
He says, his grace is enough,
and
it's enough for me. The second thing I'm thinking of is there are groups of people that I find very difficult to like. What's my responsibility there? Is it, do I depend on God and say, God, you can take care of this? I don't have to. Do I keep my mouth shut? Do I speak? Not quite sure yet.
Yeah, that's great. It's a great example of a half-baked idea. I'm curious what the, what the impact is. I mean, does anybody have a thought as to what the right move is there with people that we don't like, maybe? People that we maybe even feel like we should love and... If anybody has a thought, I want to give the opportunity for you all to do the work, to do some of this work, but I'm just trying to learn about this together.
When I think about shame, often it's the verse in Psalm 40 that comes to mind. It says, he drew me up out of the pit of destruction, out of the miry bog. And actually, in some versions, it says the miry clay. And he set my feet upon a rock, making my steps secure. And I think... oftentimes, that's what I think of. Like, I get stuck in the clay of shame, you know, and he's the only one that can pull me out. But it goes on and it says, if I can read it, it says, he put a new song in my mouth, a song of praise to our God, and many will see and fear and put their trust in the Lord. And I think when I think mission, I think when we're in relationship with one another, it's really important. And I think this is where God does the really deep work. Like, he allows other people to witness the work that he does in our own lives. And because of that, it gives them the confidence to go to him too. And so just that process of sharing our struggles and being vulnerable is part of the mission.
Yeah, that's good. I'm still thinking about Harold's dilemma too. And maybe, I think maybe we almost feel shame, like we ought to be doing something more with these people and loving them better or liking them more or something. And so I don't know that you're compelled to actually have to speak as much as just, I wonder if the security that Jesus gives you and his love for you is giving you a kind of an atmosphere to function in. And so being mindful of that. I think we're often mindful of difference, but he's going after our hearts. Yeah. Any other thoughts? Just half-baked or... Yeah, Barb.
I feel like they are made in the image of God. Yeah. I have to tell myself that. Made in the image of God. Made in the image of God. Given multiple gifts, things that they were created to do, whether they are being able to do them or not, I don't know. So I pray for them. I pray, God, reveal yourself to this person. Expand the things that you've given them. Give them confidence, peace, and things like that. But I just have to keep saying over and over, made in the image of God for his purposes. Because I have been, I have felt like I'm not good enough a lot, much of the time. And so I have to tell myself I'm made in the image of God for his purposes.
Yeah, good. Thank you. Maybe one or two more. What kind of thoughts are you having? What kind of reactions to this whole, these 8 weeks of content? You can go with something that's already been said and like talk about that. You can go somewhere new. Just whatever might help others as you hear about these truths.
I'm sitting here thinking maybe it's easy for me to feel shame. It's very easy for me to feel shame for other people because it's easy for me to feel shame for myself. I have so much that, you know, you just feel shameful for, even if Jesus doesn't feel that way towards us. So maybe if I get better at feeling less shameful for myself, it'll be easy for me to, or more easy, or simpler would probably be a better word, to not feel shame for other people. It's easy to look out and see what other people are doing wrong as well as what I'm doing wrong, but maybe feeling that empathy for others would ease if you could look at yourself the way Jesus looks at you or at other people.
Yeah.
I don't know, did Jesus feel shame when he was a human?
Yeah.
Do you think any of that was easy for him to not feel shame for others if he doesn't feel shame for himself?
Yeah.
I mean, that's like a cheat code.
Yeah, right. No, that's good. Thanks for weighing in. That's terrific, Matt. Thank you.
I think he did feel shame because right. Hebrews 12 says, despising the shame. So it means the shame came, and he's like, I'm going to reject that shame. So it's like, it was there. He just had to say, okay, that's not my identity. So it was, yeah, I would say it was there.
Yeah.
Cheat code.
Yeah. That's good. Somebody else, yeah. Mr. Rhodes, up here, Luke.
Yeah, I think I'm agreeing with so many of you that associating guilt and shame kind of go hand in hand. Romans 8 starts out by saying, there is therefore now no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. No condemnation. It goes on to say, for the Spirit of life has set you free from the law of sin and death. So it's kind of like there's a new sheriff in town. We don't have to live under that law of sin and death any longer. He's removed that. We're under a new law, the law of sin and of the Spirit of life in Christ Jesus. So it's helpful to think of that positionally, that we have no condemnation because that's what the Word says, not according to our feelings.
Yeah, good. Thank you. Let me kind of transition into where we're headed. So we've kind of been intentionally working through series this year. We did a series right out of the gate as kind of like the first principles of what it means to follow Christ. So we talked about the gospel, baptism, renewing our mind, living according to first principles, and how we deal with our conscience. So that was like the first set of first principles. Then we dealt with what it means to be a part of a family of families, belonging to a family of families, the first principles of church life. So part of being a new believer is being like involved with others in your life, church people. And so how we think about that. And so then kind of real closely related to that, starting next week, we're going to be thinking about the first principles of the mission. So what does it mean to participate in the mission of the church? What does it mean for us to step into that? And so I encourage you to come next week. We'll start looking at Acts 13 and 14 and this, all that was laid out there for us to follow, the kind of the way the apostles went about going about church expansion and how that informs what we go about as a local church and participate in the mission. So we're going to be thinking about that for 5 weeks, and then we'll have another session 6. So all the stuff that's landing on you or getting stirred up, we want to be, you know, keeping track of that. And, you know, even if you have a question or a half-baked idea, we'd love to hear those as we come together. But that'll be the teaching starting next week with Luke preaching that. And then we get to hear from Taylor Bauman about how that mission relates to our home lives. So how they incorporate that mission into home lives. And then we'll be thinking about like how apologetics relates in there, how it relates to church life, what this means lived out. So those are some directions that we're heading for the next 5 weeks in the month of August. And then we'll wrap that up. And then one more set of first principles by the end of the year to think about our life habits. So if all those things are true, like we're following Jesus, we're living a life that's with others in a family of families, and then we're on mission, what kind of habits do we need to have at play in our lives? So we've intentionally rooted all this in this relationship we have with Jesus through the summer so that we can remember that's the anchor. The Christian life isn't just gutting out like obedience. It's living out of this relationship we have with what Jesus has done for us. So trying to flesh all that out. But yeah, with the announcements I made, with all that's happening, if there's anything we can do to serve you after the service, grab one of us for questions. We'd love to visit. Let me pray, and then our team will lead us in a closing song, and we'll wrap up this morning. Father, thank you so much for your word. Thank you for the work you've done to shape us this summer through your word, thinking about all these different characters and how you're not ashamed of your people. And so let us continue to steep in that reality, and let that continue to be encouragement to us. Let us not lean into performance or guilt or all the things that would create distance between us and you, but bring us close so that we can step into relationships differently, so that we can show up differently at work, so that we can live out what you're calling us to be. So give us your help for these things. Thank you for coming with us today. And I'm just so thankful and encouraged by all the people and all the thought that was given in these last few moments as we think through all what it means to live this together. So we praise you for all this. I want you to be glorified in our lives, and we ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.